All right, everyone can hear me okay? Good, good. It's really awesome to be here. I second everything that Michelle had to say from White Whale, kind of taking over this to these esteemed folks that I'm getting to read with. And it's really great to just read in front of people. I've been doing some jazz poetry concerts in the month of April, and so it's kind of it's a little bit interesting not having a band backing me. So it's kind of doing it on my own. It's also can be a little bit of a tight rope walk. So I'm glad to just be able to read and kind of do my thing. So the book is Scraping Away, which I have some copies for sale that I suspect some of you are familiar with, but I've been working on a second manuscript. So I'm going to be mostly reading, hopefully, poems that are, you know, newer to you folks that aren't included in the book. Not sure when the manuscript is going to actually happen. It's, you know, two-thirds, three-quarters of the way there, but we'll see how that plays out. So some restaurants, some music play poems, and we'll see what you think of it. So this first poem is called Soup Bone Says. Soup Bone said, put a fan on it, because that's how we parch with stills here. Caged metal blades carving the air, blowing loose scraps into crumb-lined corners. A recipe for disaster is what we call this place, built on fried zucchini and foot-sized fish sandwiches. It's brown kitchen tiles, iced tea slick. Septuagenarian, Soup Bone moves bare-hunched and bow-legged, surveying his dining room with its walls decked in gimcrack, tables ringed with those teal leather chairs our aging regulars love, his red tie swinging from a starched shirt steeped in woodsy cologne. He greets everyone by name before chirping, kick it back now, good buddy, sometimes glad-handing blue hairs with best wishes on the birthday dinner, sometimes offering a scoop of rainbow sherbet when hot food gets served cold. Other days, he'll dub us shammers, the word hissing from his nose after finding half trays full of butts and a soaked rock flask swimming with water. Yet for the rest of our restaurant lives, he'll remain that minor chord, reminding us to stay busy before the sugar high of another lunch rush fades, summoning us to run warm plates topped with strip steaks and steamed veggies. The grouch in his voice at odds with a string version of Blackbird leaking from the ceiling speakers, leaving us to feel like we're someplace close to home when he barks, "Let's hustle," the only answer to all it is we ever need to do. I think something that Chris said in his opening statement was pretty right on. Was the idea that poetry, you know, is about the human condition and about like making these kind of human connections. And something about the world of restaurants has kind of allowed me to explore that. It's allowed me to kind of think about how important it is to have people in poems. And so those are certainly some of the things I've been exploring. This poem's for my father at a camp in Forest County. I'll first catch song from my father as Steely Dan churning in the tape deck between the thin walls of this two-room cabin, biting what I'll later come to dig, Horace Silver's opening bass notes, the piano vamp in a Joe Henderson solo, phrasing that sounds more like a blossom end. What began here, I'll come to know as Dad's midlife fade, wrapping itself in the echoing call of a hermit thrush, an acorn dropping a rim shot on the steel roof, his empty beers clinking on the glue stain for mica, where I'll build plastic models of hot rods. Now, at 50, I'm starting to hear the tracks played rhythm and staccato fiddles, as the clipped replies of a man who made promises by night he'd never keep. Yet it nudged his son awake each slow morning, smelling of speed stick with his first cigarette of the day, guzzling instant coffee before pulling the front door closed behind him. Back then, I couldn't know that I'll someday be fatherless and without child, or that the bot man's biggest hit will come to fill my ears with what sounds like equal parts anthem and lament. This next poem is called Shivery, and I came across it in a lit mag, the word. It means a mocking song for, like, a mocking wedding song, like people beating on pans, that sort of thing. And I just thought it was a cool word, and it was ended up finding its way into this. So, Shivery. The busboy's belly growls before every dinner shift, his salted horizon stacked with slippery plates, toted, two-handed, belt high. The load-worn grips on those gray plastic tubs slip and ready to snap. When the busser thinks of tomorrow, a stain worries his only tucked shirt, a splash of red sauce lurking about the forks, pulling in a puddle of watery Merlot. At the dish pit, he pauses to shred what's edible, resting atop another load, vanishing to the back hall with a veal shank, glistening in marrow. Proud of found calories, the umami worth tucking into. He leaves the slop and scraping for the scullion, a tweaker picking a hockey puck steak, some cold lasagna, a dead piece of sole. Nightly burdens return from the dining room, swooning with booze on the arm, kept women and Nat King Cole stuck and repeat. In time, a few bucks get pressed into his bleach-soaked palm, letting the buster forget about pans clanking in a pot sink like a shivery, mocking what grows quiet in his back pocket, folded and not yet wed with ache. This next one is kind of my Point Park poem. It's kind of a true story. As punk rock as it gets to me, I guess. So the title is To the Fuckhead Who Stole My Bike. Thursday, after another day's last class ends, I step into the dry heat of a yellowing Indian summer, only to find an empty space where I left my bike. Letting the sin of theft turn disbelief into blame, my eyes, a pointer wagging all over the ripped and torn of Wood Street, the chopper's cheap weed making the block reek, while the slap boxers connect with their combos, and that stringy dude in a Pornhub hoodie runs game on another pinch-faced bus stop girl. Later, the cops show you to me, bulky and bucko-capped, your slick black tracksuit making you both shadow and blind spot on the secure feet of your work, where all that's needed is 7 seconds to spring those spare notes from another clip lock. And what comes after is you atop my pedals, palming sweat around the grips, dry mouth and gunning with the bebop of another coaster at its last dip, the valves of your heart opening and closing without fail until you could be the desperation which began with a Diamondback snatched from an open garage that summer I turned 12, granting me a season of scuttling along behind a flock of rolling friends, jealous of the smell of rubber folded into the insistence of all those free wheels clicking. It's another restaurant poem, I'll wrap some things up with restaurant poems. The past, for those of you that haven't worked in a restaurant, is kind of where the chefs will, the cooks will put up the food. Usually there's like a heat lamp in there. And usually it's also a place kind of bantering back and forth. Lots of fun stuff happens in the past. In the past, a regatta of hands spawned the hum of this stretch, voicing a kitchen stainless with a singed and scarred lyrics. The singed and scarred carried lyrics of sweat and onions beneath their stained white aprons. This last refuge for tatted men to preach into boiling grease, while the cross-eyed dishwasher lets his radio croon with the Commodore's tall tales about easy Sunday mornings. In the past, someone's working off last night by chugging Kool-Aid, the color of blood running rare on a platter of prime rib resting beneath the heat lamp's searing orange coil. In the past, a testy chef chews his lip while zesting an orchard of green apple over a peppery dish of risotto, squinting his way to soignée by slicing a plump of roast duck into a shingle, letting it rest atop a blueberry demi brushed into a comet's tail, finished with a nasturtium tweezer until it floats, a lily pad on a pond of China. In the past, impatience sounds like a dusty Epson printer clicking out chips until they reach the cracked tiled floor, fixing tempo to the clatter and bang of countertops, and a cook who butters his bread by making a mark of the new server until she can't forget how to cradle atop her palm and wrist another scorching plate, baited to singe a yielding skin until it blisters. I've been, I don't want to say accused, but a remark that I like to write elegies. I sometimes don't realize that I'm doing that, but one of the things is working in restaurants, just working with people in general, is that unfortunately some of them will not always be there. And so a few years ago, I actually got an email from a former student while I was in class, and students were doing something else to look into, like, that something had happened to this young man, and sure enough, something had. And it was really, really pretty sad to have seen somebody so full of promise to just kind of pass away very, very unexpectedly. So this is for Nigel Pega. And the poem is called Comfort. Without warning, the busboy died in his bed after school. The genes of his heart finished ticking toward failure. And for guiding him through the world of service, his stepfather will bless me in Devlin's plush parlor, among the sweet-smelling sprays of lilies and mums, as I wait for my turn to kneel before the open casket, framing its body in repose, listening to the murmurs of others searching for answers after finding none in the prayer cards or small talk which follows. It'll take months and a slow dinner shift to get me thinking again of that awkward, shaggy boy, mocked for his smell and the way he puppy dogged one patient waitress. His name, still listed on the wall-bound schedule, greets me as weekly comfort, reminded me of those down times when we talked film, Scorsese, his favorite. Looking to widen the lens, I burned him copies of Pickpocket and Yojimbo. Adding a few sets of techno, I hoped he'd hear like a soundtrack. But tonight, finding a stack of discs marked in my scrawl, after reading the server's side stand, I'm left unsure of what to do with worthless things gathering in corners, like the memory of finding that young man having his first smoke with the dishwashers, telling lies and wearing greasy shoes, their laughter sprinkling the ground after every lick of ash. And I'll wrap things up with something that hopefully some folks get a couple of chuckles out of. All of these are true stories that have either happened to myself or people that I've worked with that I decided to borrow those experiences. Worst shift ever. The worst shift ever begins before the sun goes down, when with a bead of sweat at the temple, you read the chef's specials to a floor top, already moist, the air conditioner wheezing along in a heat wave. They blame you in silence for its lack of function. On the worst shift ever, you will serve brown water, poured because somewhere a main has snapped and it's a full house. On the worst shift ever, you will get cut, then get asked to cut lemons, a sting that makes you forget the chafe burning in the crotch of your dickies. On the worst shift ever, your guest will find a used Band-Aid in their onion soup and a dead cricket in their field greens. The idiot manager will tell them it's good luck. On the worst shift ever, you will congratulate a rotund woman on her pregnancy, only to be told she's not expecting. On the worst shift ever, you will get to explain to one of your former students seated in your section, the one who loved reading Murakami, what it is you're doing here. You will buy him dessert. The worst shift ever begins with you missing the alarm, then arguing with your girl before finding that the only clean pair of boxers are stretched and sagging at your hips. The worst shift ever is a summer Sunday afternoon, manning a slow double while the rest of the world enjoys the sun. You will get busy and want to stab. On the worst shift ever, you will find out your father is in the hospital, or you've been diagnosed with lupus, or that your dog's been found paralyzed. You will be asked to finish waiting on your tables before clocking out. The worst shift ever happens when your worst hangover gets multiplied by a busser who is called off, and the other servers are no call, no show. The worst shift ever is a dishwasher without any crack to smoke, or when you get torn cartilage in your ribs, or find a piece of glass digging into your toe. The ER visit will take hours. The worst shift ever isn't when the staff threatens to quit or when the building gets zapped by lightning, leaving you in limbo, but might be finding on the one night you finish early that your car has been towed. And if it ends, it ends after midnight with you huddled at a table, working on some type of a second drink, counting the wrinkled bills, getting yourself steeled to do it again and again and again. Thank you, folks.